jiggy with it. Feeling good on a Thursday. It's a beautiful day, and it is the fourth day of the work week, almost in the books. Just one day left. It's the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. Brett Rump with Caleb Hatch. We've got you connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Your questions, your thoughts, your suggestions, always fire away. Whatever you've got on your sports brain, 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Coming up on the show, we get a chance to visit with Kevin Bowen. He's been out at Colts camp as they count down to the, I guess, the official start of preseason, where they'll have a game coming up on Saturday against the Buffalo Bills. Probably not a lot of first team reps, but we'll talk to Kevin Bowen about what the Colts need to get out of this game against Buffalo and what players this game might be important for. As the Colts try to finalize a roster. We've already had a couple of guys, I think, that have stepped up and been pretty big so far in camp that maybe not as much was expected from. One of those players is Drew Ogletree, the tight end. Of course, it's position of need, and the Colts went out and got Jelani Woods, third-round pick in the draft, and everybody thought, okay, there we go. They're satisfying their need for a tight end. And actually, it's a guy they took near the end of the draft that might be the one who becomes the standout, as Drew Ogletree has really performed well down at Colts camp and had another good day today. Also, a backup linebacker, JoJo. I think it's JoJo Damon. But JoJo, he's been doing well at linebacker. We'll have to get to know him and ask Kevin Bowen his thoughts when we talk about the Colts coming up in about 30 minutes from now. Hour number two, we get a chance to visit more with high school football coaches as we count down to the start of the high school football season. It will get going officially 1 week from tomorrow. We'll be at Homestead High School as the Spartans host the Northrop Bruins. It's the beginning of the Quentin Bowen era as the head coach of the Northrop Bruins. And, of course, the Homestead Spartans hoping that this might be the year to reclaim the bell. And so we'll be out there to start it all off coming up next Friday, including the Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate pregame show at 6. We'll have play-by-play with Shannon Griffith and I at 7. And then after the game, we'll jump over to the Coventry Pizza Hut for the Indiana Physical Therapy postgame show, with opening night scores, highlights, coaches' interviews, and more. That is part of our 7 hours of coverage for high school football each and every Friday right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. But since we started Homestead, thought, you know what, we're going to replay a few of the interviews we had here on the show. And because it's a special edition show and it kind of comes and goes in 2 hours' time, if you didn't have a chance to hear the interviews, we'll kind of put them out there one at a time over the next few days. And so today we're giving you Chad Zolman, coach of the Homestead Spartans, and we'll hear from him around 5:20, and then we'll wrap up the show. Eric Dutkevich, Dute from Parkview Sports Medicine. We're going to break down the NE8. So if you're a fan of Norwell, East Noble, Leo, DeKalb, New Haven, Columbia City, Belmont, Huntington North, did I get 8? Did I mention New Haven? I'm trying to remember if I got all 8 in there.
I don't know if you mentioned New Haven, but if you're asking for any math, I am not your guy.
I was just trying to figure out if I got to 8, because it's the NE8, and I want to make sure I got to 8. But we're going to preview the teams in the Northeast 8 Conference coming up with Dute around 5:35. Once again, you can connect with us. We're on social media, Twitter. You'll find me at Brett Rump Sports. Make sure you're giving me a follow. Also follow Caleb Hatch at Caleb Hatch. You can follow the show at Sports Rush 1380, and you can follow the station at 1380 The Fan. So the NFL, I did not realize that they put lines out on games throughout the season. Already, some of the sports books have gone through the entire slate of games all the way through week 18, and they have picked what the line is for that game, which, quite honestly, I think there's bargains. I mean, if you feel pretty strongly about a team being overrated, or you feel pretty strongly about a team being underappreciated, this is your chance And so I thought, well, if they've picked every game, then let's just go in and figure out one-loss records based on the teams being a favorite. So if they were a favorite in 10 of the 17 games, we'll give them a 10-7 record. Vegas knows best sometimes, so we'll see what Vegas has to say, and we'll focus on the AFC, because as Colts fans here in this state, we want to start with the AFC. Now, you know, I looked for you Bears fans. I checked to see what the expectation was for the Chicago Bears, and to be quite honest, Bears fans, you might not want to know. 16 games on the Bears schedule currently have lines. In other words, there's one game that there's no line attached to. And I can just tell you, if they play Cleveland at all, there's no line, because right now the Cleveland Browns do not have any of their games posted with a line. They're off the board. But 16 of the 17 Bears games do have a line. Caleb, I want you to tell me, out of 16 games for the Bears, how many do you think they are a favorite?
I'm going to go with 4.
It's actually 2.
Wow.
2 games right now. 2 out of 16 that the Bears are a favorite.
Wait, 17?
Well, no, because not every game has a line.
Okay.
Because of different circumstances, as far as maybe injuries or uncertainty at quarterback, or you're the Cleveland Browns, there's no line. And so there are certain games that aren't posted. The Bears have 16 of their 17 games currently posted with a line. For instance, the Colts only have 14 games with a line. Out of the 14 games that the Colts have a line, do you want to guess what the Colts record is?
You said 16 games or 14?
14. 14 of the 17 games have a line for the Colts. Out of those 14 games, what is their record? And I know, Caleb, I know this is math. I apologize.
9-5.
Boom! Give yourself a bell. You nailed it. 9-5 for the Colts. Now, if you look at the AFC South, it doesn't look good. Tennessee, 16. Of the 17 games, all but one has a line for the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee, 8-8. Jacksonville, to me, is a little bit of a wild card. I think we actually debated this case. I could see Jacksonville being one of those teams that wins 4 or 5 games. I could see them be a team that wins 8. I mean, I there's a pretty good range for me on Jacksonville. But as far as what Vegas projects, and I will tell you this, Caleb, up front, Colts are favored over Jacksonville in both meetings. 4.5 down there, and I think they're a touchdown favorite when they play in Indianapolis. But Jacksonville has 17 games. Every game does have a line for Jacksonville. Want to take a stab out of 17 games? All the full schedule for Jacksonville.
3-14.
4-13. You're not close. Too far off. You're very close. But let's look at Houston. 16 of the 17 games have a line right now for the Houston Texans. Any guess on what the Houston Texans record is as a favorite? How many games they're a favorite, how many games they're an underdog, and then all we did was we gave it a one-loss record based on if they're a favorite, they get a win. If they're an underdog, they get a loss. What do you think Vegas has for Houston right now?
1-16.
You can go ahead and scrap the one. They only actually did 16 games, and all 16 are losers. They are an underdog in every single game. So that means the AFC South has the Colts 9-5, Tennessee 8-8, Jacksonville 4-13, Houston 0-16. Now, I also looked at the AFC West because I thought that's going to be a very competitive conference. I'm curious as to how Vegas perceives it, because I think The Chargers are a bit of a wild card. They could be fantastic. They could also be disappointing and not make the playoffs. I think they are more likely to be disappointing and not make the playoffs because I think Justin Herbert, at this point, might still be slightly overrated. Now, somebody can record that line of me saying that at this point, I think Justin Herbert might be overrated because when he becomes this year's Joe Burrow and ends up leading the Chargers to the Super Bowl, you can all come back and play it for me. I know. I deserve it. But I looked at the AFC West, and of course, the team I think that's going to win the AFC West is Denver. And Vegas doesn't agree with me. In fact, Vegas believes that Denver will have the third best team based on the current lines. But if you want to talk about a division that is dominating not only other AFC opponents, but dominating non-conference or opponents as well, look at these records in the AFC West. And remember, the AFC West is playing the AFC South. So part of that, Jacksonville 4-13, Houston 0-16, is against AFC West teams. But Kansas City is 13-3. And then the Chargers only had 14 of their 17 games that had a favorite. But they were the favorite in 11 of the 14. So Kansas City 13-3, Chargers 11-3. And then Denver came in at 10-4, which actually put the Raiders under 500. 15 of the 17 games had a line for the Raiders, and the Raiders were 7-8. And once again, this is just giving, based on Vegas's favorites for every game that's on the schedule this year, if they're a favorite, they get a win. If they're the underdog, we're giving them a loss. And then we're figuring out what the records are going to be based on the Vegas spreads at this point. So if you look at the AFC West, you've got KC 13-3, Chargers 11-3, Denver 10-4, Raiders 7-8. There is Buffalo. Okay, a lot of people think Buffalo might be the favorite to win the Super Bowl. In fact, Vegas is giving Buffalo the tag as the favorite to win the Super Bowl. Buffalo has 16 of their 17 games, Caleb. 16 of 17 that currently have a line. Based on who the favorite is in those 16 games, what would Buffalo's record be?
I'm going to guess in 16 games, we'll go with 13-3.
16-0.
What?
Undefeated. Look out, Miami. The Dolphins might not celebrate with the champagne this year. You know, the 72 Dolphins, still the last team to go unbeaten.
Oh, very aware. They make a big deal out of it every year.
They do. They celebrate with the popping of the champagne. They certainly enjoy it. But, Buffalo is the favorite in 16 of the 17 games currently on the board. And Buffalo's got a tough schedule. But they still are favorites in all 16 games. Now, if you want to look at the AFC North, Cincinnati 9-5, Baltimore 10-3. Vegas likes Baltimore much more than I do. Pittsburgh 4-11, and the Cleveland Browns not even getting a line. And I'll tell you what, if you're a Browns fan right now, you should be absolutely embarrassed. And it's not because of anything on the field for your Cleveland Browns. You should be embarrassed in the way that organization is run and the fact that they are making a decision, despite all the evidence that is out there, number one, to sign Deshaun Watson. Number two, to set up a very player-friendly contract so even with a suspension, it will not cost much money. And then number three, with all of the legal troubles that he is dealing with, and I call it legal because it's, you know, going through judges, courts, and appeals process, but with all of the problems, it's not all legal, but with all of the issues that he is facing, Cleveland is making the decision to start Deshaun Watson in a meaningless preseason football game. I mean, that to me, that is a slap in the face to all of those women that came forward with their complaints, that told their stories. That is a slap in the face to women in general, that as an organization, you will trot out Deshaun Watson like he's your prized possession and have him start a preseason game when you know, even in the best case scenario, he will not be playing for 6 regular season weeks. Now you could say, well, he hasn't played for almost 2 years. He needs to get out there and get reps.
Here's the thing, though. When he comes back, he's not going to be the same player he was before. Like, there's so much rust to knock off. You can't just say he's going to come back and hit the ground running and they're going to be a playoff contender if they can go 3-3 in those first 6 games, which is very realistic looking at the schedule. Like, it's not like he's going to come back and instantly they're going to be this mega team. That's not happening.
No, and to put him out there in a meaningless game where you have to ask, what is a quarter going to get you? What is a quarter of Deshaun Watson really going to get you? To put him out there, it's an embarrassing decision by the organization. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Because if he's going to play in week 7, he's still got a long way to go, and going out there and playing 1 or 2 series of football right now will mean nothing 7 weeks from now. And quite honestly, he can get just as much work going ones versus ones at camp than he can going ones versus a lot of twos in an actual preseason game. Because I don't even know who they play, but I guarantee whoever they play is going to be resting a lot of their prime players and their best players. And so it is just an embarrassing decision for the whole organization. And if you're a fan, you should be almost humiliated that the team you cheer for is making such a poor, 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 poor decision. 46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. So basically what we have out of the AFC, here's the way Vegas has set it up. If you go by the records of wins for every game they're favored, losses for every game they're an underdog, number one in the AFC would be Buffalo, 16-0. And again, somebody's probably out there saying, but they play 17 games. That's because there was not a line posted for all of their games. Second place in the AFC, the Kansas City Chiefs at 13-3. Third place in the AFC, the Los Angeles Chargers at 11-3. Fourth place, the Baltimore Ravens, 10-3. Fifth place, the Denver Broncos at 10-4. That means 3 of the top 5 are from the AFC West. And sixth would be a tie between the Indianapolis Colts and the Cincinnati Bengals, both at 9-5. That's what they've got. That's what Vegas has right now as game lines in the AFC as we head toward the start of the NFL season in early September. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Kevin Bowen still going to join us coming up about 15 minutes from now. It is a Thursday edition of the Sports Rush.
1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Kevin Bowen joining us in about 12 minutes. I didn't know, Caleb, you hadn't seen the Antonio Brown message. He put this out on social media almost like a press release, and it is the craziest thing you may ever see. And that's saying something when you're talking about Antonio Brown, because he's been the definition of crazy through about the last 4 or 5 years of his career. It is crazy. I don't want to overuse the word, but that's the only one I can think of right now. That when this show started, Caleb, I remember when I ranked wide receivers and I said that Antonio Brown was the best wide receiver in the game. And I know at the time, if he had gone nutso like this in any way, I would not have given that kind of credit to Antonio Brown. At that point, he was pretty normal. I mean, we were judging just his performance on the field. But now, I don't know what has gotten to him, but this is what he actually posted, and he's basically doubled down on it, and it looks like he's reposted it. But this was his statement that he put out on social media, and I'm quoting Antonio Brown. My biggest regret in my career doesn't involve calling my GM a, quote, cracker, end quote, or showing up to Raiders camp late in a hot air balloon with frozen feet, or throwing rocks at that UPS driver. And it definitely doesn't involve taking my shirt off, doing a victory lap around Jet Stadium mid-game while throwing up deuces. My biggest regret is that I'll never get to see me, Antonio Brown, play a game live. Sure, I can watch the game afterwards, but I can't imagine what that was like for you all to see something like that. Like watching the Beatles or Jesus perform at Red Rocks. Signed, Antonio Brown, on his biggest regret. I don't even know what to say. It all speaks for itself, doesn't it?
Like, okay, it was bizarre at the beginning, and then the last sentence is perhaps, I think, one of the strangest sentences I have ever read. Like, I'm not even kidding. Like,
it's like watching the Beatles or Jesus
at Red Rocks. What? Like, sincerely, I don't know what's going on. I hope whatever it is, like, if this is for attention, so be it. It is Twitter. But if there's actually something going on, like, I hope for his own betterment, his health, what have you. I don't understand, like, what person writes that, and unless they're just trolling everyone, I don't think he is.
What, like, writes what a that miracle you have all witnessed by seeing me play football.
Yeah, a straight face, you know, that has their sanity. I don't know what's going on, but that is, like, the strangest statement I think I've ever read.
My biggest regret is that at the end of the workday, I can't get in my car and listen to the Sports Rush live. Doesn't sound any better when I say it. Antonio Brown, WTH. That's about all you can say. And H might be the better of the consonants in that particular thing. Well, let's speak about tweets, Caleb, because while we're on the subject of tweets, let's talk about Victor Oladipo, who takes a little bit of a stab at the Pacers organization, doesn't he?
Yeah, I saw that. Was that, what, yesterday? And he sent the tweet that I don't even know how he found the tweet, for one. And secondly, the timestamp on it said 2:04 a.m. Now, he was probably in L.A., I'm guessing, so it's just after 11 o'clock. But still, like, if you're searching and finding stuff like that, and his takeaway, throwing in Domantas Sabonis, who was traded, who never said an inkling of issues with the organization.
Never asked for a trade.
Yeah, the whole thing is bizarre. I don't know how he got to his conclusion.
Well, and let's go ahead and do a dramatic reading of Victor Oladipo's tweet as well on the show today. I might just win. Is there a radio Emmy for dramatic readings? Here we go. Victor Oladipo tweeted, "Trust me, on the same VO, just a little wiser. Eventually, the realization has to surface that the players can't always be the problem. Exclamation point. Think about it. PG, VO, DS. Now, for those of you that don't know the Pacers' history, that would be Paul George, Victor Oladipo, and Domantas Sabonis, and more. And then he's got a, what's the emoji? The thinking emoji with the finger on the chin. I love y'all, Pacer fans, and miss you all more. Don't believe everything you read. All that, the little chocolate swirly
crap.
Yeah, that would be another way to put it, is delusional. All that you read, that blank is delusional. I guess Now, here's a question. Is he throwing any other players under the bus? Because, you know, the one player he didn't mention is Malcolm Brogdon, who is also now out of town, right?
Yeah, fitting that he just left him out of that.
Is there perhaps, is this actually, because he said, I miss y'all, Pacer fan, love y'all, Pacer fans, miss you all more. I mean, I guess, who is he taking the shot at here? Because, yeah, if you investigate this and you think it is kind of strange that Malcolm Brogdon didn't get included in this, because you're talking about all the star players that are no longer here with the organization, and you didn't mention Malcolm Brogdon. Love y'all, Pace fans, miss y'all more. Don't believe everything you read. That blank is delusional. What do you think he's saying? I guess it's all in the interpretation of it, right? On what he's trying to say in this somewhat encrypted message.
I guess my takeaway is just another shot at management. I don't know what else you take away from it.
46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Of course, it's been kind of a crazy week for star players in the NBA, and I guess I use star players in the NBA loosely when I'm talking about Victor Oladipo, but no doubt Kevin Durant's a star, and he's trying to, it's a power play, right? Trying to get the Brooklyn Nets to dump a general manager and a coach in favor of keeping him, when he knows that's very unlikely. Now, sometimes players and coach, they could maybe not really see eye to eye, but when you're trying to take down the entire structure of an organization and tell the owner, I don't want the GM, I don't want the coach, I don't even like the guy who makes the coffee in the morning. Basically, what he's doing is he's setting it up for the perception to be, if you choose them, then you owe it to me to trade me, right? He wants out, and he's trying to do everything he can to get out. And he's even mentioning now the teams he wants to be traded to. Apparently, he feels like he's got a lot more leverage than he really does. He's trying to figure out every way to gain leverage, but he's mentioned Philadelphia as a landing spot. Boston would be a desired landing spot. We'll see what happens with KD as well. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. Time for a quick break. Kevin Bowen joins us on the other side to talk some Colts football. It's the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Tin Cavs got a couple of extra base hits, including another home run from Joshua Mears last night at Lake County. And in the ninth inning, a ball off the wall, and Anthony Villar tried to score from first. It was a bang-bang play at the plate, retiring Anthony Villar with the third out of the ninth inning, ending the ball game. The Tin Caps lose it 5-4. Drama in East Lake, Ohio last night. Tin Caps back at it tonight. 6:35, first pitch, 6:15. The Hoopy Insurance Services pregame show. John Nolan with the call here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Joining us now on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline, from 93.5, 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis. Morning show co-host Kevin Bowen, KB. How's things going down in Indy?
Hey, Brett. How you doing, man? Sorry about that.
No, we're good. And, hey, we were just talking before the break about the Victor Oladipo situation and the tweet that he put out and really who should be offended and how this tweet should be taken. What was your response and reaction to it? What did you think of the Victor Oladipo tweet?
Well, I think the first thing to do is probably just kind of roast Victor, and I guess I'd rather start here. I think there's a lot of, there's a lot of truth in what he said about the organization, in that it is an organization that over the last handful of years has been near the bottom of the NBA. When you talk about playoff wins, playoff series wins, obviously this past season, drafting as high as they were. So it has been a franchise that has, gone through a 5-7 year period that's really unlike any in the last 30 years. And again, kind of in that bottom third of the NBA. Having said that, I think it's rather idiotic of Victor to compare his situation to Paul's or Domantas Sabonis. Paul was a multi all-star, got this team to the brink of the NBA finals, and, he ran into just an absolute buzzsaw in Miami. The Sabonis thing, I mean, you traded Sabonis because two bigs weren't working, and you got in return, you know, a bright young point guard who has major potential moving forward. And, you know, unfortunately for Victor, I just think he changed. And I think a lot of the people that were close to him early in his career changed. He started listening to some people that I think gave him poor advice, particularly off the floor. And then out of his control, he suffered just a devastating injury that took him from being, I think, a nice player in this league, a borderline all-star caliber player. I still don't think he would have sustained the level we saw in that 2018 season. But I think, he, top 40 player, something like that in the league. And he's just never going to get back to that level because of how devastating that injury is.
What did you think about the slight of not mentioning Malcolm Brogdon when he went through the rundown of players that were, quote, star players here in Indiana and ended up being traded elsewhere?
Well, I would agree with them. I don't know if I take that as a slight of Brogdon. I mean, I guess if you look at NBA All-Stars, I mean, Sabonis is multi. Paul is, you know, whatever, a handful of All-Stars at this point. And Victor would fall into that category as well. I would not slot Brogdon in there. I don't know if there was – I don't think they particularly got along great, but I don't think there's, like, extreme venom between the two.
Yeah.
And, again, I just don't think Victor is on the level that even Sabonis was on. I think Sabonis plays a position where you just naturally devalue him. And real part of it is the injury, certainly, is a huge part of Victor's basketball career, late 20s, now into his 30s, not reaching the level that he was hoping for. And at the same time, as much as I'd like to think, boy, Victor, just log off Twitter at 2 a.m. on a weeknight. I mean, I get tweets, Brett, and I'm not anywhere close to a professional athlete at times. I just want to go crazy over and just rip people. And that fan, obviously, had tweeted at him, tagged Victor in that tweet. Attacked him on a personal level. So, you know, I'd like to think Victor could be the bigger man in that situation, but I'm not going to fault him too much for that. I just think as much as the organization has had issues over the last handful of years, Victor grouping himself in with Paul and Domas and thinking all three situations are exactly the same, I couldn't disagree more with.
Talking to Kevin Bowen, 93.5/107.5, the Fan down in Indianapolis. Of course, Colts camp continuing as we'll finally see this team on the field this Saturday. So far at camp, I've not been able to be witness, but I have been following along as much as I can through social media channels, what you've been writing and posting. And it sounds to me, and I just kind of want to get your take since you've been there and have seen it. The star of camp seems to be, at least in the mind of many people reporting, Drew Ogletree at tight end.
Yeah, I would say he's one of them. I frankly think the defense has been the star of camp, and several guys on that side of the ball that I would point to before I get to Ogletree. But I think considering where he was drafted, Brett, you know, a sixth-round pick coming from a smaller school, Finley transferred to Youngstown State, I do think he's exceeded expectations. I think what also helps him is that Jelani Woods, the third-round pick, has not looked as good as him. So, like, when you can compare two rookie draft picks, one from a high-level school in Virginia, one from a lower-level school in Youngstown State, it's very comparable. And right now, without question, you'd put Drew Ogletree ahead of Jelani Woods on the depth chart. Someone messaged me after practice today, Brett, were like, is Drew Ogletree having a Mike Strawn-type camp where he flashes and then he won't do anything during the season? You know, I feel like we fall into this trap where it's like we just group, again, every camp star together. With Strawn last year, there were a lot of drops from him. And I think there are a lot of questions internally of, can we fully trust him on game days? They threw him into the fire last year, week 1 and 2, and they just couldn't trust him anymore. And that's why he didn't play any notable role the rest of the season. I think Ogletree is starting to earn a little bit of trust. He's stacking some days together. He made a couple of beautiful grabs today in 7-on-7, one from Matt Ryan, one from Nick Foles. And obviously tight end reps are wide open as well. So I don't want to act like this guy should be drafted in round one of your fantasy league, but when the Colts play, if week one was tomorrow, or let's say Saturday instead of at Buffalo, it's at Houston this week one, the second/third tight end, Drew Ogletree would be getting those reps. So he'd be playing, you know, 20-ish snaps with his offense.
I think if we probably went through and said, what are the top three most positive things that we've witnessed with camp so far this year, it's likely that the top three might all be on the defensive side of the football. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would put in a different category, just health. You know, and I mean, you're 10 practices in. The offensive line is practiced every single day together. I think Ryan Kelly missed one period of one practice. That's it. The O-line's been virtually intact the entire camp. Paris Campbell missed a couple of periods the other day. Mo'Ally Cox got banged up one day, and that's it. I mean, you've had your starters. Obviously, Shaquille Leonard is out, but all your starters on the active roster have practiced every single day. That is a miracle. I mean, we haven't even seen veteran off days for anybody. Stephon Gilmore, Buckner, you know, guys that have been playing in the league for several years. But defensively, yes, I've been very impressed. I think Stephon Gilmore and DeForest Buckner and Yannick Ngakoue have carried the torch. I think Bobby Okereke has really stepped up with Shaquille Leonard out. And I think what has stood out to me, Brett, we've seen a little bit more of the playmaking turnover-wise these past couple of days, especially earlier this week. But I think they're doing a really nice job of just consistently getting off the field normally, if that makes sense, i.e. not needing a turnover to bail them out, just forcing a three and out, dialing up a big pass deflection or a big pass rush on third down and getting off the field. Some of it is probably to be expected. I mean, Gus Bradley's not coming in here and installing, you know, some crazy new system. And I think if you're going to tell me, you know, offense or defense, you know, what would you consider the strength of this team this season, I probably lean more towards the defense. And the offense's greatest strength, you just don't fully see in training camp, and that's Jonathan Taylor. And they're obviously not game planning for the defense either. I think there's reasons to be optimistic on this defense. You and I have talked about Yannick Ngakoue a ton this offseason. I think he gives this defense just a presence as a rusher and, frankly, an edge personality-wise that's been lacking. And I think Stephon Gilmore, he looks like he can still play at 32. Now, can he sustain health for 17 games? We'll find out. But in terms of him being over the hill, I don't see that.
You know, I think it's so strategic how coaches are going to utilize three preseason games, because every team has such a unique situation. And I've got an answer for that. Unfortunately, Frank Reich driving home from Westfield is out of range, but I do have a solution. I would love to see, this is my thought, I would love to see the Colts offense take a series or two. And through the first half, if the offense or defense ends up in the red zone, then put in the first team. Because I think red zone football is so important on both sides. You have to get stops and force field goals. You have to convert touchdowns when you get there. And I would love to see a strategy where instead of saying you just play the first two series, you're done for the day, that maybe you play a series or two, but if you end up in the red zone, you get some reps as a first team. What do you think about my crazy idea?
Well, my first thought is getting in the red zone is no guarantee. So I'm not holding my breath with, you know, Nick Foles or Sam Ehlinger or Jack Cohn executing that way.
I did say if.
Fair. I agree with you about the red zone. And I do think finishing off drives has been a problem for this team recently, and I think in camp as well. I am totally fine with the starters playing in the preseason. Guys get hurt in training camp all the time. You cannot put these guys fully in bubble wrap. Are there some guys you just don't need to see? Yeah, I don't need to see Jonathan Taylor take one carry in camp. Both a new quarterback, two new offensive line starters, a week that you just went through where when the full pads were put on, you dropped a lot of footballs, the timing was off passing offense-wise. I want to see the starters play, and I would like to see them play, I think, at least a quarter. You know, Frank is probably up to a quarter is his preference there with some of these starters. But I'm all for it. And, you know, I want to make this pretty clear, Brett, because we talk so much about the Colts losing eight straight season openers.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is deeper than just week one. If you look, and I decided to take the month of September and the Ballard era, because I think your GM, in combination with your head coach, they decide how training camp and the preseason operate from a physicality pad, playing time standpoint. The Colts are 6-11 in September. That's the fourth worst record of the NFL in that month. The Texans, the Jets, and Giants are the only three teams with a worse record in September. That's not good company. And if you look at October, November, December, it's a football team that is better than average in those months of the year. If you look at them defensively, which I think is really important to look at as well, because they've obviously had different quarterbacks each of these last, you know, handful of seasons. So let's look at defensively. I think I looked it up the other day. They're like 22nd in the NFL in points allowed in September. And then if you look at October, November, December, it is like middle of the pack to better than middle of the pack in those months. So clearly you've got teams around the NFL that are doing better out of the gate and sustaining that to some degree throughout the season, whereas the Colts aren't getting off the good starts on both sides of the ball, more so offensively, of course. And then it's just tough to climb that mountain throughout the entire year and get back into the picture. And it's a big reason why, you know, you haven't won a division in that time frame and, you know, have made two playoff appearances, but have, you know, really needed to, you know, rattle off 9 of 10 or 8 of 10 or these crazy runs. So to me, I don't know if it's the exact cure-all, but I think it's really important to do something different. You've continued to operate this way throughout the preseason in the past, again, handful of years. It's time to do something a little different. They've changed up practice time. Now they're doing this. I think if you talk to anybody that's played in the NFL, they would say that preseason playing time, for the most part, is good, even for veterans. I mean, Matt Ryan, coming off his MVP season in 2016-2017, threw 30 passes in the preseason the very next year. So I think for a team, again, new quarterback, young pass catchers, even a new defensive system, I'm all for playing the starters on Saturday a little bit. I'd like to see them play in week 2 against the Lions. Doesn't sound like that'll happen. Sounds like they will play a good amount week 3, which is the last preseason game against the Bucs. But I think it's a good change of pace.
I think it's fascinating. We went through in our first segment today, the lines are out for every game this season. Now, there's a handful that there is not a line. But we went through and gave teams wins for every game they're favored, losses for every game they're an underdog. And of the 14 games that right now are on the board for the Colts, they were 9-5. Do you want to guess, and maybe you've done this, but do you want to guess what the record was for the AFC favorite Buffalo Bills?
Oh, my. Geez, is it 17-0?
16-0. And one game not on the board. 16-0. Oh, gotcha. They are favorites. Wow. 16 games. And they've got a tough schedule. But yeah, Vegas, I mean, Vegas loves
they
them.
They have Kansas. They probably have the AFC West team at home, I would guess, with their schedule. Because, again, that's the disadvantage the Colts have of the AFC this year, Brett. They'll play the AFC West.
Yeah.
You know, the other divisions, AFC North, AFC East, will not play the AFC West.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that Vegas has them right now as the favorite every game this year. So, but we'll see what happens. Kevin, we'll let you go. Always appreciate you jumping on, talking some Colts, and even today a little Victor Oladipo. But we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
I'll sneak in a quick line now that you brought it up. I believe the week 1 line, the Colts favored by 8 at Houston, I think is the biggest in the entire NFL, which sounds eerily similar to last year's season finale. And for our degenerates out there, I think the Matt Ryan news that he'll play a quarter on Saturday, the Colts are favored over the Bills, last I checked, by 1.5 for Saturday.
Yeah, the high-risk bets of preseason football. You know, I'll share this story. Last year, I think I won like 8 of 9 games, and I can't remember if it was the first preseason or second preseason, but I won like 8 of 9 just taking the under.
Whoa, look at that. That's smart.
Yeah, because nobody can score. I mean, I saw the first week it was like you had, 11-6 or something. And it's like, man, nobody's scoring points. I'll just take unders. So there's my advice. Now watch. Scores this weekend will be like 45-38. Kevin, always enjoy it, man. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Brett. You guys do the same.
Yep, that's Kevin Bowen from 93.5, 107.5, The Fan down in Indianapolis, co-host of The Morning Show with Jay Query. And it's always our pleasure to welcome Kevin to our program. Coming up, hour number 2, we got Chad Zolman. We also have Eric Dukiewicz. It's a busy day on a Thursday here on The Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.